Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Dustin's Vinyl. Very excited. I'm cleaning some vinyl today. This is very important. It's like when you're a vinyl record collector, it's kind of like having a hot rod car or a classic car. Like you have to always keep up the maintenance on it. So that's one of the things when you buy classic records, you gotta clean out because there's a lot of groove and dirt and just years of playing that you gotta kind of maintain. So clean your records, everybody. You can get a little alcohol and get one of these cool little brushes and clean the grooves. Clean the grooves. Very excited to be back on the new show, Dustin's Vinyl. It's an upgrade show. Very excited. And that's where we pull vinyl and we talk about it and see where it goes. So we're going to do a little grab bag. Nobody ever knows this is rigged or not. And we're going to see what we got today. Oh, come on. The man in black himself. We have Johnny Cash, Story Songs of the Trains and Rivers. This is a really cool kind of rare album here. It's one of the few Sun Record label albums that I actually own. And those of you that know the Sun Records label, Sam Phillips, all the great, Johnny Cash and Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis and Roy Orbison all came into that amazing studio. This is a record off of that label. And this, if you know much about Johnny Cash, he had a fascination with trains. Also with prisons and wearing a lot of black. But this is the third album by Johnny Cash singing about trains. This is actually the compilation of the three. His first big hit was Hey Porter, which is a song about, you know, Porter on train. And that was his big album and his first album, actually. And so this is really cool. And Johnny had a fascination with the American Railroad and kind of, if you listen to Johnny, to me, kind of sounds like a train. He's just got this kind of gust and just darkness to him. And this is really cool. It's got Hey Porter, it's got Blue Train and Rock Island Line, which is a really good song. And there's actually a documentary about Johnny Cash and his love for trains. I think it's Riding the Rails. If you get a chance, really cool. And there's nobody cooler in the world than Johnny Cash. I love Johnny. Johnny is one of those guys that kind of just fused so many different elements of music and everything from country to soul to gospel to, I even say, a little punk rock. And even the later stuff is amazing. Rick Rubin, all that stuff, did a cover, you know, Nine Inch Nails, Hurt and stuff. So he's really cool. So if you don't have any Johnny Cash, get you some. I'm very excited to have this album, and I always like to show the Sun Record label, which is just a very cool thing when you can actually have an original Sun Record label. So get you some Johnny Cash, and check out the train stuff. It's really fascinating. And Johnny had a lot of different themes. He went through like country western stuff, like Woo! Anybody? All right, everybody, get you some Johnny Cash. That's my pick of my grab pick of the day, and very excited to keep talking vinyl. All right, huh? How great was that? Got to open with Johnny Cash. You know what I mean? That's how you open a show. You know what I mean? Like that's the best way to open a show. I'm gonna bring in my featured friend, co-host, rock and roll, just trailblazing, cool dude, Mr. Jeffrey Paul, everybody.
Hello, Dustin.
You like Johnny? You like a little Johnny Cash?
Love Johnny Cash. When I was growing up, that was what my father used to listen to. Like I told you, my father really, he didn't like jokes. He wasn't a big movie guy.
Okay.
But he loved Johnny Cash. He loved country music and he loved Johnny Cash. And that was what was always playing in the background, Johnny Cash.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite Johnny Cash song? You have a couple? Give me three. Give me your top three. Or two. Give me two.
I'm going to go Folsom
Prison Blues. Awesome. Another train song. Yeah. It's about a train watching people.
Train rolling.
While he's in prison. While he's in prison. He's just watching people, you know, that are having a better life than him. Just in a train. That's what that whole song's about. And he's killing that man in Reno. And what?
That was great. And you alluded to some of his later work. And I think probably, when you look at covers, the best cover I've ever heard. I argue this with people all the time. I think Hurt is the best cover I've ever heard.
Yeah, I think so too. It just has such soulfulness to it. You know, it's like there's two covers that I really love, and that's one of my favorites. My other one is Cowboy Junkies. They do "Sweet Jane" by Lou Reed, but and it's in the same category to me because that's an amazing cover. But even Trent Reznor was like, "This is like he did it better than me." Like he even said it. He goes, "He took this song to this soulful level that I didn't even think it had," and when I first recorded it. But yeah, that's what Johnny did, you know, and that late stuff is amazing. There's like four records off American Recording by Rick Rubin, and there's a whole bunch of covers and just kind of later stuff that, you know, Johnny like recorded in his, at his home studio. And he, you know, that's what I love about guys like that, that, you know, when they were towards the end, they really try to produce as much content as they could. And David Bowie was like that, and Johnny Cash, Glenn Campbell. Mercury. Yeah, Freddie Mercury. It's so cool when, you know, it's like those guys, it's like a horrible time. You know, they know the end is near and they really try to, you know, get as much out. I'm so glad they did. But yeah, Johnny's like a wide, you know, I've never met anybody that didn't like Johnny Cash. Like, even if you're like a punk rock guy or a straight, you know, what, you know, straight rock guy or full regular country guy, like there's going to be a song that you like. And he just, yeah, such cool styles too. Such a storyteller. Like, you know, Boy Named Sue is so fun. That's and a great just, one. You know, just really cool. Different kind of music, man. I just felt like it kind of, I don't know, this kind of took country to another direction, which is, you know, really interesting at the time. And at the time, what he was doing was phenomenal. Like, it was so edgy at the time. Everybody's like, what's this guy talking about killing a guy in Reno to watch him die? Like, what's
That's
happening?
That's a great one. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, and then the fact that he recorded it in a prison, like, how punk rock is that? Like, he's just like a live recording, first guy ever, live recording in a prison. You know, it's like San Quentin. Like, that's so rock and roll to me. I mean, I don't get more rock and roll than that. And that was before anybody was doing anything close to that. So cool.
Yeah, he was authentic. He wasn't doing it for sure. He was the real article of this guy. You once said something to me that I think bodes well, you know, the same as what Johnny Cash did, especially with Hurt. You once told me about the way of telling jokes, you know, connecting with what you're saying. You know, sometimes you see comics just kind of do things on autopilot and reciting jokes. It almost sounds rehearsed, but connecting with every word you said.
Yeah.
And
yeah, to me, absolutely. It made
a big difference in my stand up. But right. When you hear Johnny Cash and when he's singing Hurt, and it's not his words, but the take and the spin he puts on it and the arrangement of it. I mean, yeah. You believe that. And it's better than the original, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, well, yeah, it's, you know, it's important to feel what you say. And I think that's kind of, you know, what I was kind of getting at is like, feel what you say. And I think it's with Johnny Cash. He never really went to prison. He never really did a lot of these things. He never killed anybody, all this stuff. But it's like, but you think he did because he feels it when he sings it. And that's the thing, yeah. Is it's like he has such a way of encompassing and kind of feeling the song. And, you know, it's like it just feels like everything he's saying is his life and it happened. And, you know, it's like, yeah, it's definitely a soul that, you know, very, very few musicians have, you know, it's just a quality that he has for sure.
The other guy who comes to mind about that is the guy who's on your desk over there is Sinatra. Sinatra would do the same. Yeah.
Sinatra's
he would
do great.
The same thing. When he sings a song like Night and Day, and he's talking about the differences, the juxtaposition between night and day, you know, the way he sings that song is that he's not singing it. He's telling you a story. I think it's, I make a parallel too.
Oh, absolutely. And My Way, forget it, dude. I mean, that's one of my great favorite songs, you know, because it's just like,
you know the story behind that?
What's the story?
The story is, he was going to retire.
Okay.
And he puts it out there. He's doing a retirement song. And he calls up Paul Anka. Paul Anka was an emerging songwriter at the time and says, you know, I'm going to retire. Write something to me. He put this out to a few songwriters. Paul Anka and Sinatra are both performing in Florida, and Sinatra calls him and says, hey, after your show, meet me at this restaurant. He goes in the back of the restaurant, and Sinatra's there with a woman, and Paul Anka had the song, and he gives him a tape of the song. A couple of weeks later, he calls him up and says, this is what I did with it. How much do you think Paul Anka charged him for the song?
How much?
Nothing.
Nice.
He made no money off of it. He didn't get a nothing. He gave him the song that was like his present, his going away present from Paul Anka to Sinatra.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's such a great song. I talk about covers. I love the Sid Vicious cover as well.
It's a great cover. Yeah.
It's so badass. That's when I started getting into the Sex Pistols and I think that scene in Sid and Nancy where he's like singing it. But yeah, it's like, I mean, that's the thing is Sinatra, Johnny Cash, you know, these guys, they'll never see men like that again. You know, these were like these real kind of made it their own 100%. Path. Like they were non-traditional. They didn't look like they should have looked for the time. They just found a way to be talented, but at the same time, just kind of bust through these industries. Like, you know, and it's like, that's what's cool about guys like Sinatra and Cash. You know, they definitely just, you know, made their own path and just like kept moving forward and doing all kinds of cool stuff. So very fun.
Yeah, they had real confidence.
More than confidence, man. Just kind of like just an energy and a aura about them. You know what I mean? They owned a room. Guys like that, you know, it's like, you just kind of wanted to hear what they had to say or see what kind of art they were going to, I don't know, just something about those guys. There's nobody like them.
The reason why I say confidence, because I think everything starts with confidence. Without confidence, I don't think you can take chances, risks, be creative.
Maybe. I mean, what about Woody Allen? You know, some guys don't have confidence. I don't know.
I think Larry David
has an insecurity that makes him a genius. Like I see what you're saying, but there's also, I think there's two sides to it. I don't think you have to be confident about everything. I just think you have to be ultra talented. You know, just the talent is the most important. And then I think everything else is, I hear what you're saying, but I'm saying some guys don't have confidence and they're talented.
Okay, it's a point. We're losing confidence in this argument.
No, we can disagree. We can find a common ground. What's the featured album of the week? Come on, Jeff. What do you got for
Okay,
us?
Here's the featured album of the week. Okay. Yes. Well, in the spirit of Halloween, and if anyone observed my shirt,
nice. Perfect.
We are going to be talking this week about the Rocky Horror Picture Show soundtrack, 1975.
Look at this 1975
version. Look, there you go.
This is an original picture disc. Like, isn't that great? It's one of my prized possessions. It's worth a lot of money.
Great one. If I'm going to use one word to describe this album, I'm going to say campy. I'm going to use two words to describe this album, I'm going to say catchy. If I'm going to use three words, I'm going to say fun. Campy, catchy, fun. That's what I think of this album. It is glam rock. It is rock and roll. This album it's released in 1978. It went to number 49 on the Billboard charts. And what I like about it is all but two songs are around 3 minutes. Okay. They're all kind of short songs, real. So if you don't like something, you move on and the next one you're going to love.
That's what I love about a lot of early music sometimes. It's like short songs. Nobody makes it like the Ramones, short songs. And then it's like,
short songs, or power chords.
Yeah, right.
So where do we start with this album? Do we want to talk chronological order? Do we want to talk about best songs? Let's talk about some of the best songs off the album.
Okay,
and let's do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Let's do our top five songs off this album.
Okay.
And going in number, and I don't know, you know, I know you know the album. So if I'm going to go with number five, my number five song off this album, I really like I'm Going Home. And I'm Going Home, it has some great playing on the piano on this one. But not only that, it's one of the few songs with a real nice little slide guitar. And this is Frank making his exit. The whole album, but this song in particular, is very theatrical and has a nice use of the chorus in joining him with singing I'm Going Home.
Yeah, that's a great song. Yeah.
So that would be my number
five
song. Yeah.
Go ahead. I'll let you do your top five and then I'll jump in. Go ahead.
Okay. Number four. You would think it would have been a little bit higher, but it's not. I'm going to go Hot Patootie, Bless My Soul. This is Meatloaf. This is pre Bat Out of Hell days. He's singing in a higher range, but you can clearly tell it's Meatloaf. This song is grandiose. You know, it is big. And what really stands out in this song is the use of the sax. I mean, it is real 60s style rock and roll. I love this song. It's great. Hang in There, Teddy Bear, that tour, Meatloaf opened his concerts with this song and with a clip in the background, and he cannot sing it anymore. You can't even get close. I saw that tour. It was brutal. I'm going to switch something around here. I'm going to go number three favorite song off this is Time Warp, which is probably the most famous song. And really, the song is just dance instructions.
Yeah, it was Macarena of its time, you know.
It's the Macarena of its time. But what's great is the guy who created Rocky Horror, who sings in it, Richard O'Brien.
Yeah.
Such an underrated rock voice. Holy smoke.
Yeah, man. He really has a great voice.
He could really, really sing. There's a part like, when you're under sedation, like that growl in his voice is, man, it's really as good as any rock singer would sing a lyric. I watched the video, because when you do this, you go down these wormholes.
Sure, absolutely.
And I watched the video of Richard O'Brien just with a guitar playing all these songs acoustically. And oh, wow. It still sounded sick, amazing. My number two favorite song is Sweet Transvestite.
Great song. Yeah.
It is. It's a great song. I think this is the performance in the song and in the movie that pretty much made Tim Curry a star. It's a good upbeat rock song, but what we were just talking about, confidence. It's his confidence in singing the song.
Swag confidence. Yeah, absolutely.
Swag confidence. Oh, yeah, all those adjectives are exactly what makes him such a great performer. And just how he ends it, you know, with the that little run on, so come up to the lab. And then, bang, you know, it is just so, it just oozes of confidence. I think it's such a great performance. I love this. And my favorite song, because I've heard so many different versions of it, but I still love the opening song, the science fiction double feature sung by Richard O'Brien. Now, if you watch the movie, it's Patricia Quinn's lip syncing over Richard O'Brien's voice. He's actually singing. He sings it, written by Richard O'Brien. He's the guy who plays Riff Raff in the movie.
Yep.
And what I like about it is it's a tribute to science fiction B movies. Like there's a lyric in there about the RKO picture show. I like that reference. And it references a lot of 1950s, early 1960s, but there's a really beautiful wailing saxophone going on in there. So those are my top five songs off of this album. And there are other songs that I think are standouts, like Touch Me is a good one. The longest song on the album is Rose Tint My World, which is basically three songs. Pretty much with the most famous of them being Don't Dream It, Be It. So there's a lot of like really good stuff here. Damn It, Janet is a good one. And the reason why I like that is it's very, very Broadway. And you can make fun of me all you want. I love Broadway stuff. I love the Broadway musicals. And Barry Bostwick, who plays Brad, you can really hear his Broadway training. He was the original Danny Zuko in Grease on Broadway. So nice. You could really hear him singing, especially in a line like when he goes, I just want to tell you, I'm no joker. You know, you could just, like he has that little falsetto in his voice. Yeah, so I really, really like that. I love this album. I mean, if you're in a bad mood, this is the album to put on. It's, like I said, it's a lot of fun. All the songs are kind of catchy. And if you don't like one, it's over within 3 minutes.
Exactly. It's kind of like being married. It's over in 3 minutes. If you don't like it, honey, it'll be over in three. Great research.
That's sex with me.
great research. Very cool. Yeah, I'm glad that you have an affection for this album. I think there's very few albums that encompass so much of kind of a film and a cult following and all the things that kind of come with the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I mean, there's very few. I mean, maybe The Wall, and, you know, it's I don't know how many other movies they're playing at midnight, you know, and in like all these towns across America where people are actually still showing up to see something from the 70s. So, you know, this is, I remember being in Texas and being exposed to midnights of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And we used to always, we'd go out, we had to drive about 45 minutes to get to this one theater that was playing it. And I just remember it was the first time just walking into this movie theater and just, you know, just hearing all, you didn't know what it was going to be like. And you just like all this craziness. And it's all these kind of misfits just kind of walking into each other in costumes and dressed up and, you know, with just dudes that look like girls and guys and the hunchbacks and things and all these crazy costume people. And then as soon as the movie started, you know, this thing starts, you know, the people just start, you know, responding to the screen and just kind of interacting and going back. I'd never seen anything like that in a movie. And I was just like, what is happening with this thing? And it was just such a cool experience. And we would go all the time. We would, I mean, there was a time we were going for like a long time, a couple, like a year or so. We would just go every Friday night or a Saturday night. We would, that was our thing. We would all just kind of get in the car and go, me and my buddies. And, you know, I remember, and then I started kind of acting out some of the scenes. And I remember, you know, my father was kind of like questionable about my sexuality because I was so into this movie. And they were just like, are you queer, boy? You know, it was like all this weird stuff. And then I remember one time my dad showed up, but he'd heard that I was going to this movie all the time. And he knew a little bit about it. And, you know, then he was in the back watching me. And I think I played Rocky and it was in my underwear running around the theater and stuff. And then he was just, you know, just like, I guess I'm going to have to accept this wild kid I have that'll just do whatever. But, you know, it was really cool because I was seeing this movie. What's cool about this movie, and, you know, it's the weirdest movie when you don't know what it is or what you're about to see. It's, you know, it's this transvestite. I don't know if you could say that anymore. And he's wearing lipstick, the thing, and all these things are happening. It's got this Frankenstein kind of, you know, structure to it. And then, so that's how it's easy to follow because you're like, okay, he's a mad scientist. He's making a dude or whatever. And so it's just, that's what I like about music is it breaks down kind of that thing that, you know, it isn't, you don't care about sexuality. You don't care about, you know, kind of things that you might get wrapped up in if you're kind of in a narrow-minded world. And music kind of breaks through that. And I think this ridiculous movie, and I love that the fact that, you know, Richard Brine did it in Denton, Texas and all this stuff. And it's just a, it's just such a cool thing. You know, when you're watching, you know, I watched it last night actually, and it was so cool. And it took me right back to the theater. You know, because the songs, like when Meatloaf comes in for Eddie, you know, it's so cool. Like, it's just you know, it's just this moment in the movie that doesn't make sense. And he's there and he's like, ah, and it's just like he's dressed so punk rock and cool. And yeah, this music was a big part of my life for a little bit in high school and stuff. And it was kind of those years where I was trying to find music and explore different things than the crap they were playing on the radio. And this was one of those experiences, you know, and as soon as I saw the movie, I went out and got the album and, you know, went out and started kind of like getting into it more for just the music end of it. And yeah, man, it's just, it holds up. It has, like you said, it has so many different genres of music in it. Or it has like a traditional Broadway kind of sound, but it also has, and I love his voice too. The songs that you liked are kind of my favorite as well. And yeah, the opening song is phenomenal. Like that's the range that he has. Yeah, that's a guy. Because I was trying to look at stuff that he had done, and he'd done a few other things. But I feel like he was underused. This guy was very 90%. Talented. He wrote this whole thing, man. And it's like I feel like, you know, we missed an opportunity with Richard O'Brien. I mean, this guy should have been doing like 5 or 6, you know, musicals. Like I don't understand why, you know, this is the only thing that he's really done that people know of. But you know, and Barry Bostwick, was it? I think he did that show with Michael J. Fox. Wasn't he one of the, I think he's one of the actors.
Oh,
in
I
that.
Think you're right. Yeah. Spin City.
Spin City. Yeah. He was like the mayor. He played the mayor.
Yeah, right.
And,
right.
And I love that song. And it was, yeah, it's just, there's never been an album or a production of something that is, you know, that's been more fun in my opinion. You know, the fact that, did you ever go to some of the live screenings and with the interaction and stuff? Did you ever see any of that?
This is where my Staten Island upbringing comes in. And no, I never did. It took me a long time to get into this. I didn't get into this until probably my college years.
Okay.
But high school, no. And then even then, I was still way like more into like metal. So it took me a little while to really discover it. But once I did, you know, when you look at this, this is like real punk rock, I think.
And absolutely.
Also, know who we've been talking about this for a few minutes here. We never even mentioned that Susan Sarandon sings in this.
Yeah.
A young Susan Sarandon.
She looks amazing in it too.
Amazing. You're right. Yeah. So
She has a pretty good voice. Like I was watching it last night. I was like, you know, her voice is pretty good. Like it's, you know, she's another one I think underused. Like she should have been maybe singing a little more. But yeah, it's you know, it brought out a lot of talent. Tim Curry is just, he owns this thing in the film, and it's just he comes out like he's Alice Cooper or something. Like that scene, he's just so rock and roll. and then when you this is the transition, he's in garter belt and a thing, and you're like, what's going on? And then the next scene, he's like wearing like a Chanel dress, and you're like, what? And so but the music in this really is fantastic. And it was nice to do two things. It was nice to listen to it just audio and not be influenced so much by the theatrics of the movie and just kind of listen to, you know, kind of the brilliance of the music. And that was nice to do. And then I watched the film. And so then you get both things happening at once. And yeah, it's just really a cool experience. It really is one of the few things where, and I just love, you know, once we can go back to, you know, regular shit again, it'll be, I'm going to take you with me and we'll try to find a theater that has Rocky Horror happening on a midnight. And I don't know if the kids still do it. I'm sure there's maybe somebody that will still be doing it, but there is nothing like sitting there on a midnight and just being around people that are really into Rocky Horror and having them yell at the screen. And it's not just yelling at the screen. Like there was an album that came out called the Rocky Horror Picture Show, the participation album. And they teach you how to kind of insert lines during the movie. So there's people that like have listened to like all this Rocky Horror participation album stuff. And so they know exactly when to place, like, for example, when he goes Antissa, and then of course everybody goes Consta and then patient. And like, it's just,
oh, this, I didn't know they said Consta. I just thought they said, say it. That's what I thought.
It's called say it, but what it is it teaches people like when to drop the lines.
But at that part, I thought they just say it. I thought they yelled say it. I didn't know they said they consta. I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, there's different, you know, but there's an interaction. So people dropping lines throughout the movie. So it's just really cool to kind of like, you know, just the fact that it's so kind of interactive is really cool. Yeah, but that album is teaching people how to kind of like interact with the film. And so, and we kind of learned it on our own, but then there would be somebody be like, dude, you just listen to the album. We learned it by just coming here. You know, there was always somebody like, yeah, whatever, man. It's like, we don't need to buy the album. We'll just figure it out as we keep coming. But yeah, man, it's definitely cool music. And I love the broadness of it. And I love that, you know, somebody like you who grew up in a machismo, whatever, and, you know, all that crap that you, same thing in Texas. And then the fact that we can kind of let that go and kind of experience something that is kind of out of our realm and it's in some sense, and then, you know, still appreciate kind of the music of it and how rock and roll and cool it is. I mean, that's a testament of something that's, you know, true art, where it can kind of like, you know, kind of break you out of your shell and give it a chance, you know? And this reminds me also, I remember I got into Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Which is
very similar.
I think without Rocky Horror, you don't have Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
No, you don't have any of that stuff. Well, and then without David Bowie, you don't have this stuff. You know, there's like, you know, there's certain, you know, there's
a lot of Bowie influence.
Absolutely.
You definitely see that. Who else was in this? The guy who played Blofeld in James, you know, he's James Bond villain. He's in the inspector.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah, with no neck. Yeah, he's fantastic.
It's just so weird. It's such a, and look, they made this on a shoestring budget. I looked at it very closely. I didn't write it down, but I know it was made for, I'm almost positive it was made under $100,000. It was made at under $100,000. And God knows how many millions it has grossed.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I don't feel sorry for Richard O'Brien, because at least he got the, you know, you get the writing royalties and all that stuff. So at first I was like, this guy didn't work anymore. This guy's a genius. Then I'm like, he made a lot of money off this. But yeah, it's, you know, that's what I like about it too, that it's like, you know, punk rock, like you said, it's kind of like this thing that, you know, they took a chance on this, and I guess they did stage versions of it, and it became popular, and then that's how they were able to convince people to, you know, make the movie because of how popular the stage version was. But yeah, it's definitely a very cool movie, and you know, and the time warp is fun, and that's the thing, is when you're in the movie theater, we all get up and do the time warp. Like, you get out of your movie seat, we're all doing the time warp. Like, it's just this thing is just, has so many memories attached to fun. Cause, and you explained it well, you know, campy, you know, fun, all that. That's, you know, it has all those things to it. And, yeah, you just let loose. That's what this album did for me. And it really made me want to come to New York, you know, cause it was like, this feels very New York, even though it's not, you know, in the city or anything. It just, the theatrics of it reminded me of kind of art that was happening in places like New York. And that's where it was very popular, the stage version and stuff. So, but yeah, this is definitely a fun time, man.
Do you know what it's considered, the new Rocky Horror? What? It's no music, but with people kind of like now participate and yell stuff. Have you ever seen the movie The Room?
Yeah, I saw. Well, the movie was great, that the one that Franco did and stuff. But yeah, I've watched the videos and stuff. But that's definitely, it's a very similar vibe. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's such a bit. I was obsessed by this movie. I mean, Dustin, I can't begin to tell you how many times I watched The Room.
I think that was a little different, because I think there's actually some real talent in this, where that one's not that there's not talent. I mean, you know, it's debatable.
There's no talent in The Room. Yeah. Stop. Well, there is nothing. But what's great?
The lighting's good. Like,
yeah, the guy who did the lighting, he was good. Yes.
You got to find a silver lining in bad things. But no, but I love that about that. I love, you know, I've never seen The Room in a midnight thing. I'd like to, actually. It seems like it'd be a lot of fun.
Well, what they do, when things come back, every now and then, like, you know, about once, twice a year, Tommy Wiseau will come down and they'll do it. Like, what's that place on Bowery? What, there's a movie theater on Bowery.
Oh, I don't know. Bowery
Theater.
I think
it just closed too. Shit. Yeah. But it'll be either someplace there or IFC. They'll have
that's do what they do with this. Yeah. Wherever they have this, they probably have something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, probably. And he comes in, like, you watch the movie and he answers questions and signs autographs and shit.
Yeah.
This past Father's Day, my son got me a cameo with the guy from The Room. So.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw that's so funny. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's how crazy I was with The Room. I loved how bad it was.
I like that about you. No, that's a good thing. And it's like, you know, that's one thing I like about this movie. It just definitely encompasses all that, you know, kind of interaction and fun. And you can appreciate art on different levels, you know, because there's art that's like, you know, perfect and, you know, like Queen or something, where it's just like the music is great and everything is perfect. And then there's art that's really good, but then it has other elements to it, you know, that you can, you know, find funny things in it. So, and just interesting kind of, you know, I don't know, theatrics, but this is definitely a fun album. And I'm proud of this. This is my picture disc. I love the picture the picture disc. You know, they have like, you know, it's just so cool when they print, you know, the image on the album. So, but
that's first edition.
This came all the way from Texas. I've had this a while. It's like a limited edition, and it's got a number on it and everything. So this is you know, see how long COVID lasts. I might have to, you know, sell it for groceries.
No. Don't do that.
Maybe this show will become about me hawking off my vinyl. Okay, can I get a bidder? Can I get a bid? Can I get a bid? Daddy Dustin's needs a new auction. Hat. Yeah. These Stetsons ain't cheap. I'm going to sell off my albums. But yeah, this is fun, man. This is definitely a good time. And yeah, it's like, what else is on here? Yeah. And you know, one thing I really love about the last song too is really cool, because you said that it's kind of a abode to like all the science fiction movies and stuff. And I like the part where, you know, he climbs the tower, kind of like a, almost like a King Kong kind of thing. Yeah, going home, and he climbs the tower, and then he falls off into the pool, and it's this whole dramatic thing. And yeah, it's just really kind of a homage to all these, you know, kind of, you know, things of the past. And that's what I like about it. It encompasses a lot of cool stuff. And yeah, sort of cool. A lot of talent in this film. So this album, film, everything. So if you haven't seen it, make sure that you see it and you listen to the whole music, the whole soundtrack. It's such a cool experience. And so, yeah. You know,
When I listen to this stuff, I listen to it in the gym. Like when I'm doing spots, I park my car and I'm walking over to the spot, I'll put it on. I was listening to it, and it just flows, man. It makes the time go by so much quicker.
Well, what's cool about, like, you know, musicals is, you know, some albums are like that. Like, you'll have some albums that tell a story, but, you know, musicals are, you know, literally telling a story from start to finish. And so that's what's cool about them. I mean, pretty much all musicals, like, that, the music tells the story. So, you have an opening, you know, experience, and then, you know, it tells a story about what happened and thing, and it's a closing thing. So it really is a nice way to kind of hear a story through music. Is really an interesting way to kind of experience that.
You want to get the whole story, you got to do is listen to the first song. it gives you the whole thing right there.
Yeah, you know. Sometimes, you know, not everything.
No, I'm talking about in this album. And,
this album. Yeah, absolutely. But I love the opening to this song. That's such a great song. And his pipes, man. Yeah, definitely. I'm really frustrated that
Dustin.
So good.
It's crazy. Like, how high he can get.
How did nobody give this guy? You know, I heard, I got so much into Rocky Horror, I bought the Tim Curry album. He had a solo album. And
he had a hit off that.
You think so? Yeah, he might have. Yeah, it was nothing crazy.
I do the rock. I do the rock.
Okay.
Remember that?
Okay.
Yes, I do the rock. Oh, man. That had to be a tongue in cheek song, too. I remember that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I got so into this album that I went out and searched for some more Tim Curry music. But I think he had one album, and I remember I have it. I can visualize the cover and everything. It's like a red cover, and he's on the front. But he's got great pipes, man. He definitely is, you know, he's another one that I would love to have heard a little more of his musical talent. You know, he played some cool roles, but, you know, like Legend, he was great in that. He played the devil guy in Clue, and, you know, he's such a great actor, but really, you know, interesting
Home
voice.
Alone. Home Alone 2.
Oh, was Home Alone 2? I think Trump's in that. Yeah.
Trump is in it. They film it in his hotel.
That's what's so weird. Everybody's like, why don't you like Trump? I was like, just the fact that he was in, the fact that I'm voting for someone that was in Trump too. It's kind of like I never liked Reagan because he was in a movie with a monkey. It's like, come on, man. Like, I need a little more credibility in my candidates.
You're talking about two of my heroes.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. Two of your heroes. Shut up. Get out of here. Get out of here. You just like cheap. You just like low taxes. I know what you're about, buddy. It becomes a whole different show now. Yeah. Johnny Cash, Democrat. All right. All right. So what else we got? Let's switch the topic quick before it gets weird. All right.
Yeah, new music.
New music. What do you got? Talk to me, buddy.
This is kind of new. It's released already, and okay. It's something I would like to maybe talk about next week.
Okay.
A little clue into that. But there's a new band. You know, we've been talking, you know, this is our third show. We've been talking about some older stuff, but brand new, just came out this past month. A new album by the Struts.
Struts, talk to me. No, I don't know the Struts.
Struts are great.
Okay, they
are
cool. Great.
We're going to hold off on them because I want, maybe we'll do that for next week. You know, a little sneak preview. We'll talk the Struts. But they have a
brand. You can't just bring up the Struts and then leave me hanging. Give me a little bit. Give me a tease. Give me a touch. Give me something.
All right. Here's the tease, Dustin. If you like Queen and you like Joan Jett, you like the Struts.
Okay.
Why this band isn't bigger than they are right now. I don't understand the world, because everyone gravitates towards Greta Van Fleet as being the new band, or maybe Rival Sons being like the band that'll break through. I really believe it's going to be this band here.
Yeah.
Check them out. We'll talk about them next week. And they have just came out, and the album is already hot. There's their first single is a collaboration with Kesha on it. You'll like it. Trust me.
She's a cute girl.
Yeah, I think she's cool.
She's cute. She looks good when she dances. I love how you're being all hip with your young music. I'm just going to stay old because I'm old. I don't give a shit.
I'm young. Listen.
No, you stay young. You be the young guy. I'll be the old guy.
This is what the pandemic's done to me. I'm 27 years old. Look what it's done to me.
Absolutely. You look great. You look great. Just hard drinking back in the day. Back in 2009. this is cool. This is a class of 55. That's how old I am. This is Memphis Rock and Roll Homecoming. It's a vinyl LP coming out. I believe it's coming out next month. Johnny Cash, Roy Orbison, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, all the Sun Records guys.
Wow.
That's some cool stuff. Bee Gees. I love the Bee Gees. I don't care what anybody says. Too. Early Bee Gees, before Saturday Night Fever. That's a great soundtrack. But before that, they're really good. They kind of got lost in all the disco, but they have some really cool songs. Like if you get some
I gotta get a message to you. It's one of my favorite all-time songs.
Great stuff. And so I think this is a little older. Children of the World and Bee Gees Main Course, I think, is one of the ones coming out. But what else we got here?
You know what I like about the Bee Gees, Dustin?
Talk to me. What do you got?
Is when Maurice died, they said they would never perform as the Bee Gees again. Mm. You know, Barry and Robin would perform sometimes, you know, as the Brothers Gibb. But they use their name, but they never performed another show as just the Bee Gees.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
I met Barry Gibb once, and he couldn't have been nicer and more of a gentleman. And I was, you know, there's very few people I would be in awe of. He was one of them.
Nice. I always hate when people tell me that. I feel like it's always like, this guy was a nice guy. Do you have any stories where we met a celebrity and was like not a nice person? That would be, I want to hear those stories.
Jack Nicholson. He was a dick.
we had a Knicks game and they're playing the Lakers. Like what happened? Where was that at?
No. I did production for about 19 years.
Oh, you did? You've had a very interesting life. Yes. And
I've had an interesting life. And I was, we were at the, Old Roseland, you know, okay. Roseland isn't there place. Anymore.
I've been there. Yeah.
And there was a party. There was a pre-Grammy party there. And what's his name? Nicholson was there. And the same night, that was like Madonna was there and Anthony Kiedis and all these really cool people. And now it's the end of the night. And we got to like start getting people out.
Okay.
And Nicholson is still there. And I just said, hey, excuse me. And he wouldn't even acknowledge me, look at me, wouldn't, like, you know, nothing. Just like, you know, like I was a piece of shit, you know? just really super rude, man. It was like, you know, it was like about, had to be about 5 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, closing time here in New York is 4 o'clock and you got to get people out.
Yeah.
And he's still there.
Still won't
and
leave.
He was just completely like just like rude, but would just sit there and just like wouldn't acknowledge you. And he's inside and it's so fucking pompous. He's wearing, you know, those dumb dark glasses. And like, you know, you can't say what you really think because you don't want to lose your job.
Here's the thing. Like you were pumping up that word confidence. That's what happens when you take confidence to the extreme level. You become Jack Nicholson. Because that's what the ultimate confidence is. Because he just thinks it's this godlike, you know, syndrome. Like people treat him that way. So he knows he's Jack Nicholson. He doesn't have to do anything. The worst, I remember being one time, Gotham Comedy Club. I was working there. I was kind of like, I was an intern. I was just like, you know, scrubbing toilets, whatever I had to do to get stage time. And I remember there was a comic, and her sister was married to Prince, like right when Prince first got married.
Wow.
And so she was a comic, and her sister was married to Prince. It was this whole thing. And so one night, freaking Prince comes in to the old Gotham, which was on like 22nd or something, and the small club. And so Prince comes in, and everybody's just like, oh my, it's Prince. And so it's like everybody's scattering, trying to, you know, make everything happen for Prince. And, you know, he comes in and like he sits in, they give him the whole section, and, you know, it's like all security and the thing and everything. And whatever you want, Prince. You know, whatever you want, you know, drinks and food. And, you know, so they really like loaded up. And I remember, you know, Prince leaves and all the waitresses were so angry because he didn't leave a penny. Like, oh. It was just like.
Do you have people that do that for him, though?
Huh?
Does he have people that might do that for him?
I don't know. I mean, they could have. I mean, if so, then, you know, they should do their job. But nobody did it. Like, he should. If I mean, usually those people are with him. I mean, those people should have known better. But anyway, it was a thing. And it kind of broke my heart a little bit because I love Prince. I still love Prince. I don't give a shit. But it was just so, it was just this funny moment where you're just like, it's like, you know, we were all excited. And then it was just like, yeah, he didn't tip, though. And so all the waitresses, they thought they were going to make like $3,000 that night. And it was just like, nope. So I don't know.
Really? And no one got in touch with the party or the.
I mean, what are you going to do? You get a hound, Prince? Come on.
Yes!
You don't. You know why you don't? Shitty. You know why you don't? Because the club made, listen to me, because the club made Page Six. Next day in the paper, and then the exposure of Prince being at your club generates business. So the owner doesn't give a shit. It's more about the poor little waitress. But it's like, because that's what happens, and that's why these guys act the way they do, because they know that if they're there, it's free press for the place that they're in, and they know that it's, you know, and that's why sometimes they act this way, because, you know, they can do whatever they want. But, you know, be nice to people, even when you're ultra famous and talented. It's like, you know, even if you've been in a bunch of stuff, just be nice and tip your waitress staff.
Yeah, I'm nice to everybody. I tip my waitresses.
Very cool. All right, this is a fun show. I'm excited. And the late night double feature. Bye, everybody. Good show, Jeff.
Take care, everybody.
Love you, buddy. Take care,
bye,
man.
Bye, Dustin.
Woo! We did it.